Good Monday morning. I'm Jeff Alley. This is the morning edition on the Cromwell Ag Radio Network. Arlen Suderman of Stone X is with us. And, you know, I think I've said this every Monday when I introduce you, Arlen. It's like this plethora of things that this market has been trying to digest and to work its way through. Last week we had comments from Jerome Powell. We had indication of the EPA's idea of the RVOs for renewable fuels. We had ongoing issues with regard to weather and questions about COVID in China. And those are the ones that I can just think of off the top of my head, not to mention what retail sales did and certainly the dive that we saw in the commodity market, especially soybeans on Thursday, and then just a little bit of a bounce back on Friday. No shortage of issues, friend.
No, there really isn't. We could spend a lot of time on each of those issues because each of them are important. Each of them do have an impact on the commodity markets. And they all kind of shape the picture of Wall Street. And I think one of the things that we could take away from last week's trade is we've got a lot of money being managed out there by people who don't necessarily understand how the fundamentals fit. And they're grasping at straws at times, I think, in order to do that. And I think that's why a lot of them have simply reverted to the algo computers that are just automated reading signals. And that's one of the things that's given us such big price swings that we've seen in the market. We ended up seeing a significant drop in corn and wheat prices on the week. Soybeans were all over the place and ended up a couple pennies higher week on week, ironically. So just a wild ride continues for these markets.
All right. So let's talk demand for corn for just a moment. 48% of a year ago with regard to export commitments. If this corn market is going to hit the USDA's numbers, it's going to have to get the pony rolling pretty soon.
It is, and seasonally we do tend to ship more corn in the spring, but still, even looking at sales trail the seasonal pace we need to be on to hit USDA's target by 350 million bushels, where you can't ship them if you don't sell them. And so I think that's one of the real concerns here is the sales overall. I think global demand is there. I don't see a drop-off in global demand. There's been alternative supplies that have been available. Other places are willing to empty the shelves maybe a little bit more than normal because U.S. corn has been high-priced on the world market because of the strong dollar and because of high barge freight rates due to low water levels on the Mississippi. We can still close that gap, but for that to happen, I think we need to see China come back in a significant way. And that'll be a little bit more difficult when, A, China is not very happy with us. Tensions with China are the highest that they've been overall for many decades. And when they have a new deal to purchase from Brazil, and they've already seen the first shipments of corn leave Brazil here over the last week to 10 days. And before it's all said and done, it's believed that Brazil will probably send them about 5 million metric tons or about 200 million bushels of corn, whereas prior they didn't do any business with Brazil, essentially. So it's going to be more difficult to close that gap, and one reason why I believe we're going to end up seeing a lower export target. And to some extent, we probably needed to, as small as the crop was, and that's enabled domestic demand to do a little bit less of the rationing that it otherwise would have if exports would have stayed strong.
So how long do we have to wait here in this new month to get updated supply and demand data from the Department of Agriculture? And do you anticipate, based on history, that a December report can show any significant change?
Well, I'd be most interested in see if USDA lowers its corn and soybean export targets in this report. I think if they do, they'll probably at least partially offset that with some increased domestic demand, because I think when they released their November report and even our October report, they were kind of figuring it for a desired ending stocks goal. And so they'll reshuffle the deck, so to speak, a little bit. So I don't expect it to be overly bearish by any means. They won't make any domestic production estimate changes. They might make some production changes for Argentina and Brazil. I don't expect anything significant there. They generally like to wait until the January report before they start making those. So overall, I kind of expect it to be a fairly quiet report that we get from USDA later this week.
So thinking then on the demand side of the equation, if the U.S. doesn't fill in a particular time and if Brazil has planted on time, what of a window does that give before the Brazilian supply begins to, it's already happening, but really begins to erode into what might normally be our market and our time to supply the world?
Well, when it comes to soybeans, they're going to be harvesting their first soybeans here in just a couple of weeks. Now, that's kind of like the harvest starting in the Delta in August here in the United States. You know, it's not a big volume. But we'll start seeing some trickling in new crop soybeans toward the ports by the end of this month. And then we'll start picking up momentum as we go into the first week of January. And it takes about 45 days for those soybeans to reach Chinese ports. Now, as we look at what China needs, they've got a lot of their soybeans booked already for the next couple of months. But they probably need almost 4 million metric tons yet to fill that gap. They're picking up some from Argentina now with their new pesos for soybeans program. They'll probably end up with 1 to 1.5 million metric tons there and fill the rest of about 2+ million metric tons or about 75 million bushels worth from the United States. So we'll see some additional business coming from the United States to China to kind of fill that gap. But then Chinese business will likely really drop off. And how long it drops off, the duration of that drop off will really depend on how big the Brazil crop is. Our Brazil team has it, the Brazil crop pegged currently at 155 million metric tons, 155.1. That's up about 28 million metric tons or over 1 billion bushels from last year. Argentina's going to have a small crop. If you look at a worst case scenario, if we look back, the smallest crop we've had in the modern era with similar area planted ended up with about a 33 million metric ton crop, so that would be down about 17 from where USDA is. So that still leaves the South American crop overall up about 10 or 11 from the previous year and able to kind of fill the needs for a while.
All right, so the March corn contract finishes up last week, 646 and a quarter. And the December 23 at 598 a bushel, breaking that $6 mark. And that was said that the expiring December was going back to fill some gaps. My question out loud on this one goes back to the Black Sea, where Ukraine supplies are still being funneled into the market, and the Russian wheat and Russian supplies are also trying to look for some guarantees so they can make it into the marketplace. Can't just think about Southern Hemisphere with Brazil and Argentina. How much pressure are we picking up out of the Black Sea?
On the corn side, not a lot. There is some corn moving out of there. It's interesting to note that corn was one of the crops most negatively impacted by the war and trying to produce it this year in Ukraine. And 40% of the crop is still in the field. It's the one crop that they really have not made significant progress in harvesting yet. They're working on it, but winter has set in. Fuel is hard to get by. 90% of the country's in the dark because the electrical grid has been so attacked by missiles and drones coming from Russia. All of that goes into making it difficult to harvest the corn crop. So production down significantly this year, can't get it out of the field, let alone then trying to move it. And we would anticipate that the challenges will be even greater for 2023. Russia is not a significant producer of corn, so, and you put those two together, Russia and Ukraine, I think we're going to continue to see decreasing supplies out of that Black Sea region of corn. And so that puts more of a burden on South America over the next couple of years. I do think that we'll see a significant expansion once again in Brazil. Safrina corn expanded over 6% last year. We very well could see a similar expansion in area this year. But that's also an area of the world where weather is highly volatile and changing. So I think that's going to provide some underlying fundamental support for this corn market. Doesn't mean that we can't see the algos take it and see some collapses. But I think we'll see some end users nervous enough to buy those breaks when and if they happen. And we still have China with very few surplus supplies, with a big drop in grain, sorghum, and barley supplies for it as well. And I think China is going to end up coming in later in the marketing year trying to fill some of those gaps, providing some support for this corn market as well.
Arlen Suderman is with us this morning of Stone X. Well, the 800-pound gorilla for this interview, I'm going to introduce as the Environmental Protection Agency. They offered their RVOs last week, even later than the deadline that was extended. And the numbers were good for some and not good for everything. More with Arlen coming next here on the Morning Edition on the Cromwell Ag Radio Network. All right, in 5, 4, 3. Good morning and welcome back to the Morning Edition of the Cromwell Ag Radio Network. Arlen Suderman is with us of Stone X. Arlen, there was reaction in the soybean pit last week to the RVO numbers that were offered for biodiesel. The big talk that had been going on about next generation biofuels and that someday the paradigm would shift, that we would begin crushing beans for oil instead of meal. And then the USDA shows their RVO numbers for the next 3 years that, quite frankly, are even smaller than what we're going to produce this year or produced last year. What do we read into an EPA that apparently doesn't see the expansion that's taking place?
I'm trying to think how much to mince words here, and let's just go for it. Let's say this shows government totally out of touch with what's happening in reality. You know, a big part of the expansion was for electric vehicle electricity that's generated from methane that comes from agriculture or landfills. They seem to be more optimistic about the ability for us to do that than for the renewable diesel and sustainable aviation development that is going like wildfire out across the country. And they totally pulled the rug out from under it. Now, that being said, the numbers that came out were really not a surprise. Came out pretty much as expected and as was rumored to come out. So this was kind of a perfect storm for the soy oil bears, which ended up aiding the soybean bears as well. Let's go back and look at last week a little bit as we came into delivery against the December soy oil contracts on November 30th, which was Wednesday. We had some unexpected deliveries. It's been years since we've had those kind of deliveries. Why did that happen? Well, first of all, it's in an environment where the funds had really bought into this renewable diesel industry, but it caught a euphoria there that was unrealistic on just how long it would take to develop the industry. They had gotten overly enthusiastic, and they've been through this cycle several times, and they continue to be, and they'd built some massive long positions or ownership in the soy oil market. Then we come to deliveries on this on December contract. We'd been in an environment where we've had some very profitable crush margins. We'd been crushing soybeans at historically high levels with historically high oil yields, with some soft domestic demand because of what's happening in our economy, and virtually no exports. And supplies had been building up, and then we had a couple renewable diesel plants go down, causing them to dump a sizable amount of oil onto the market into the delivery mechanism. That happened all before the RVO announcements came out. And so the funds suddenly realized, soy oil is oversupplied, and there's very few short managed money short positions here. They started dumping. The soy oil market started to fall apart. The algos jumped in there that sell momentum added to it. And then in the perfect storm condition, so to speak, the RVO announcements come out, and you outlined kind of what was in that. And then finally, one other thing that the EPA did on the same day is it approved canola oil as a competitive oil for qualifying for when it's used as a feedstock for renewable diesel and sustainable aviation fuel as an advanced biofuel. So suddenly soy oil also has a big competitor in the market as a feedstock as well. So it was kind of a perfect storm for the week, and we still would have been down sharply. But then you add in the EPA decisions right on top of when soy oil was collapsing anyway. And it was just, it was a bad day at the office for soy oil bulls.
Let me offer this, and this is my attempt at presenting an analysis, and I welcome you to shoot me down. You know, I had asked questions before that if we were going to grow this, then would the initiative come from Washington, or where would the initiative come from? And I'm talking about next generation biofuels. And the answer from you and from others in the industry had all been that this is not a federal issue. These are states. This is California. These are other states that have targeted goals, and it's the states that are making the push for this type of fuel. So it doesn't, to me it says Washington doesn't have to offer a bigger number for this to come to fruition, but it just gets me that the shift that we've already seen and the construction that's already taken place, and Washington put its head in the sand and wouldn't recognize it.
Yeah, I think we have too much sitting in an office developing policies without being in the country and seeing what's really happening. And we've seen this across many areas of government. It happens when government gets big, and just failing to recognize what's actually happening in the industry. We anticipate the renewable diesel industry is going to continue to grow despite the government, so to speak, and that demand is going to be there. We're going to continue to grow crush capacity for soybeans. So canola is going to be a piece of that equation as well, but it's going to have to do it in spite of the government.
All right, so now let's turn to the other side, because with the ethanol equation, that fuel that comes from corn, those numbers weren't too far out of line, and I would echo the point of the Renewable Fuels Association and Growth Energy and some others that seem to be pretty pleased with what the Biden administration offered.
Yeah, and I think also when you look at the fact that we are starting to see some increased use of E15, that's encouraging. That's not a big thing at this point, but it will slowly allow things to grow. And you look at the fact that ethanol can also become a feedstock for sustainable aviation fuels. That helps provide a little bit more stability for the future as well. So while this really wasn't overly bullish for the ethanol industry, at least it has some foundation to stand on and a little bit of security where it's going forward.
I had conversation last week in Louisville with Dr. Will Snell from the University of Kentucky, which is, Dr. Snell's a great guy. He works inside the industry, but maybe not the names that you would hear of those who are big players with regard to analysis. But they offered their outlook. The university offered their outlook for farmers across the state last week at the Farm Bureau Convention. And he said, we just had to be honest and say, this thing could go either way. That if Brazil produces, 5.56 or 5.6 billion bushels of soybeans, that's going to be a big supply. If they grow the safrinha crop, that's a big supply, and this market won't be able to ignore it. But if for some reason that doesn't come to fruition, if for some reason dry weather is persistent in the U.S. and affects production, this market could go either way. And that's just a hard reality. And you have to build a marketing plan to be able to be versatile to adapt to whatever circumstances are going to come forward.
Yeah, I would tend to agree with that. And I think one way to look at that is the fact that we have very stable production in this country. You look at the weather challenges we've had in recent years and still produced relatively large size crops. We've become very good at being a stable, sustainable source of corn and soybeans to the world. We have a lot of variability in other parts of the world in that production. And as long as we have a strong dollar relative to other currencies in the world, we're going to be probably the supplier of last resort, because it's going to be more expensive to come to the United States to get supplies. But in those years when they have those weather problems in other parts of the world, those shortfalls can be significant at times, and that's when the world will come to us and we'll be here to sell it to them.
If you were a betting man, as we close, would you bet that the Fed doesn't go to three-quarter point, they'd back up to a half, or is it still a green light and then the slowdown may be coming to 23?
No, Fed Chair Jerome Powell said last week it's probably time to start looking at slowing the pace of the increase, and that's all the market heard. They failed to say the rest of it is that there is still a need to get to that level that's high enough to tame inflation, and we've seen very little evidence of that happening yet. And the fact that the jobs report came out on Friday was really a strong jobs report, indicating a tight labor market, indicating we're still creating jobs, and indicating that wage inflation is hotter than expected, and that's a key component of inflation. So I do think we're probably looking at a 50 basis point increase instead of a 75 basis point increase, but I think ultimately rates will end up higher than what the market is anticipated, and that we will end up seeing those higher rates as a result that the market's not now counting on.
Arlen Suderman with us this week of StoneX. I'm Jeff Nally on the Morning Edition on the Cromwell Ag Radio Network.